What's an operating system without a browser? That was yesterday's thinking. Today, the expectations on an operating system are even higher. What's an operating system without a mail app or a calendaring app or fill in the blank from there? We ship tons in the box to make your life easier in Windows 10, and that's what we're talking about today on Microsoft Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry, and I'm here with Chantel Leonard. She's a PM lead on the MSN Apps team. So what are MSN Apps? Who is Chantel? Let's figure it all out, starting with you. Chantel, thanks for being on the show. And before we talk about anything nerdy, let's start with who you are.
Thanks for having me, Jerry. What do you want to know?
Well, how long have you been with Microsoft?
I've been at the company almost 8 years now. I started off on the Windows 7 team, working on some of the start screen and taskbar features, and now I'm working on the MSN apps, the news, weather, sports, and money apps.
How cool is that? The Windows 7 start screen, if that's not the most beloved part of Windows 7. Ah, excellent. Okay, so... But now you're in the MSN apps, so a lot of people are watching, and they have been running Windows 8 and enjoying it, and they run all of the apps that we ship as well, these first-party apps that come out of the box, and they call them the Bing apps, right? Those are the Bing app, Bing Mail, Bing Maps, Bing, not Bing Mail, we never called it that, Bing News, though, Bing Weather, Bing, all these Bing things. Do we have double apps now, or tell me the story of the name?
Yeah, so it's actually a really fascinating story. We started off in the Bing team, and so that's actually why we started calling them the Bing apps. And we started building the apps back in Windows 8. We built the first version there, and then we looked around and we were like, hey, you know, there are other teams at Microsoft that are also delivering great content related to some of these domains that we're investing in, and one of those teams was the MSN team. And so we decided to join forces, and we combined our teams. And so now we've been building apps that have exactly the same content, both on the web and in inbox in Windows 8.
So we have the traditional Bing apps, and then what else are we bringing into the family?
Yeah, so we've got news and weather, like you mentioned, and there are two other apps that I'm really excited that we're building for Windows 10 as well. There's sports and money. Best way to stay up to date with sports scores and your stocks.
So there's a couple other apps that ship in the box, and are they part of MSN apps too, like Calculator?
Yeah, so there's this great sister team that we work with as well, and they've done some phenomenal work for Windows 10. They work on the Calculator app, the Mail app, the Contacts app. The list really does go on. Like you mentioned, an operating system really doesn't feel complete now unless it really comes with a lot of those basic apps want to use day in, day out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you're not on the Candy Crush team because that ships too, right? That's part of our inbox apps now, but not a Microsoft-branded app.
That's an external developer that we partner with really closely. We know users love to play games on their PCs as well. And Candy Crush is definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah. And all right, so let me ask you a couple of things about the apps. So why are we talking about these right now in this episode? Really because all of these belong inside an umbrella, and there needed to be some decisions made across all of them to for consistency, for a similar user experience, for a style that looked the same. And that's really one of the roles that you had, right?
Absolutely. So one of the roles I had was really driving consistency across all of the MSN apps. I also worked really closely with some of my peers on how we made sure that our apps and experiences were consistent across all of the first-party apps. And some of the... Go ahead.
I'm excited to hear what you're saying.
One of the things that we did to make sure that we were building consistent experiences was that we leveraged common controls. We also worked with a centralized design team, and we really just made sure that we compared notes and talked to each other on a regular basis.
And so when I look at an app like the news app, or I'm looking at, is music part of your suite of apps as well? Groove?
Groove is one of our sister teams.
Okay, but still part of this consistent feel, because you can go from one to another, and you know they're made by the same group of, not maybe not same group of people, but the same family of developers.
Yep.
And so when I look at all these different apps and I see they're accomplishing something, you know, I'm like, whoa, that is really neat. These aren't special controls made just for your team, right? These are, you're using the out-of-the-box controls that really any developer could use as well. Maybe they extend them in the ways that you've extended them as well, but these aren't special just for MSN app controls.
That's correct. A lot of the controls and functionality that we're using are built right into the SDK, and we partnered really closely with the developer platform team that creates those controls to make sure that they were going to suit our needs and other inbox apps and a lot of the third-party app developers out there as well.
Yeah, and I happen to know there are a handful of APIs that showed up because of your team, right? And you guys really needed to be able to do this. The APIs weren't there, and suddenly they are, and you guys benefit from them, but so do I, a normal developer that's trying to make an app that does something as well. So there's a lot of benefits from having all of these apps because you're really putting the system kind of through the paces as you're building an app and making it really work. And I want to kind of go there for a second. So as you were seeing apps being built, you'd send off, let's say, five teams to build five apps. What were some of the struggles, the common struggles that you saw and you were able to overcome? Was it around user interaction or was it a technical? Or you talk to me about the process that you kind of witnessed.
Yeah, it's actually a combination of things. And I think some of the things that we really kind of faced as we were using early versions of the SDK was that it was really raw. But there's a reason why we engage early. It's so that we can help the platform team suss out where they want to iterate and really come up with something great. And so one of the things that we did was that we used the new command bar, for instance, and used the new pivot control. We also used the new nav pane or split pane controls.
The split view control for Xamarin developers, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were some really interesting things that we came across along the way. It could be something as specific as trying to figure out what the appropriate keyboarding tab order was between those different components. Or how do you actually bring all of those components in the screen in a delightful way when you're first launching? And so really bringing all of those components together and having them interact with one another became where we were able to add value and figure out what some of the seams were in terms of building an end-to-end app.
And I think a lot of developers don't realize the, you know, when you're talking to a normal community developer, one of the things he might say is, you know, it's really frustrating that the designer doesn't show this color, right? Because, you know, the designer has been revved to it. What they don't realize is teams like yours, they don't even have a designer. They're so early in the process that Visual Studio hasn't even gotten to the point where they can start parsing through XAML that's as complicated as what you guys are actually building out. And sometimes you guys forego the designer because your approach is so sophisticated, right? Because really, where I build an app, I care about performance, but where you guys build an app, performance is a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, performance is a huge deal for us. We actually have a set of dedicated people that will actually help us baseline our metrics around how fast does it take for your app to launch. And we've got tests that we've actually built into the overall Windows operating system that actually checks how every one of the inbox apps performs from an app launch perspective. And there are specific goals that we track towards. And at the very beginning of a Windows ship cycle, all our numbers are pretty bad, right? It's like you start you baseline, and then you start iterating. And,
that's right.
By the time we ship, we've got some pretty good numbers. And one of the things that we know from flighting and A/B testing is the faster your app launches, the more you're going to see users engage. And so that's something that's really critical if you're going to have an app that a huge portion of the Windows community is going to be interacting with on a regular basis.
And, you know, in a lot of ways, this is kind of a replacement to Office in the way that it serves the community. In the last, you know, I don't know, five versions of Office, every time a new version of Office would be released, developers would look at it, they would evaluate its UI, and basically just copy it, right? And that would be the guide going forward for what apps would look like. And you look at line of business apps today, they look like little Office apps. They really do, because, you know, they've got the ribbon, they've usually got the little pane on the side, and all these things that were kind of classic to Office. And as we go into these kind of modern apps now, it's not Office that we're copying. Now we're copying these first-party apps, you know, we're like, well, we need to show content in a certain way. Well, how does news do it? And we need to show content in a certain way. Well, how does music do it? Or how does weather do it? And we start to see apps that are really emulating the MSN apps that are coming out. And now, of course, with Windows 10, there's been some tweaking to the design language. So it's, you know, a little more tight, a little more clean. And, you know, the best communication of that is not MSDN. You know, developers don't go there and try and figure out the design guidance. They really just look at our apps and let that speak to them and teach them. There's a lot of responsibility back to you and your team with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you coordinate with the design because you aren't the team that comes up with the design standard or the principles. You're the team that kind of implements the design principles in the application. How does that translation occur when you go from really kind of a fluffy is kind of an insulting term, I didn't mean that, but sort of an ethereal philosophical definition of a style into what, I mean, you have to turn it into a real app.
Yeah, absolutely. We end up working really closely with our designers, designers span a couple of different disciplines. You've got motion designers, visual designers, interaction designers, and what you end up seeing is that we just go back and forth a lot, and I think that applies to even small projects where you might not have a dedicated designer, but as you're evolving an app, an idea, you kind of want to iterate. And so one of the things we did when we first started is we actually got our first version of the apps just for internal consumption up and going in about a month. Uh-huh. And then from there, we actually spent the next 5 months really refining what the app was going to feel like, when you were going to interact with, figuring out where the seams were and where we really wanted to improve things. We did things like user research, worked with our research team, would put some of the early version of the apps in front of users, ask them to interact with them, and really improve the app to where they are today.
And I was dog-fooding the whole time, not all of them, but lots of the different apps. And I was amazed, week to week practically, the entire UI would shift, right? I mean, it would be a dramatic change between different things. And I was thinking, well, you might, from this week to this week, I mean, surely you're working on, I don't know, the search heuristic or something like that. But no. The next thing I see is, you know, things are moved around on the screen. The colors are different. Maybe the fonts are tweaking here and there. How worth it is to say, okay, the design we've come up with and been using for the last 6 weeks needs to change, even though we've kind of gotten set in our ways? How worth it is it to go to the team and say, you've got to change, right? It's got to be tweaked and made better.
It's totally worth it. And, you know, a personal anecdote is one of the other routes of feedback that we really monitor closely is all of the internal feedback we got. And that was mostly coming in from insiders initially. And we saw some really great early feedback, lots of early suggestions on how to improve the apps. And overall, it was really positive. But when I look at the level of enthusiasm for where people are at now with some of the apps compared to where they were in the first iteration, it's amazing. One of my favorite quotes is from a user who sent us a piece of feedback on the weather app. And he or she mentioned that they love the weather app and it's their moment of zen for the day. And they come to the weather app to just breathe and really enjoy the new version of Windows. So that's definitely makes it worth it for me.
That is killer feedback. When you look at especially like news, weather, as they go from Windows 8, because those apps existed in Windows 8, as they go from Windows 8 to Windows 10, what are some of the bigger changes that you're introducing or kind of tweaking in the UX?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some really big changes. One of the major ones for us is actually a change in philosophy. We're building universal apps. We're all in with the rest of the developer community on universal apps. And so one of the things we had to do is step back and really look at some of the interactions and some of the ways we designed some of the pages and think through how we were going to be able to take those pages and have them scale from phone all the way up to PCs, all the way up to even larger devices like the Surface Hub.
Yeah. Now, well, that's a good question. Now, at Build, they were demoing Continuum, you know, and they went from phone to TV. TV Continuum. And he's like, well, you know, the reason this looks so good is because this is the exact same code that I had on the desktop. It's the exact same code that runs on the phone. This is, of course, is what's running then on my TV through Continuum. And I wonder, how hard was that? That's really what I want to ask. I mean, when I'm talking to developers about Windows 10 development today, we start with adaptive stuff. I mean, in a way we've never talked to them about before. As it, you know, your app could flow to all kinds of crazy sizes. How big of an impact was that on the development and design process?
Yeah, so building for Continuum was really rethinking our UX from the ground up, making sure it scaled right from the get-go. And for us, that meant a lot of design work. And from a dev perspective, it meant that we ended up taking a bit of a different approach, where we really wanted to think through what our various snap points were going to be for different layouts. And it was really an opportunity for us to really take some of the thinking we'd done in previous versions of the apps and apply them to the latest and greatest.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. So did you synchronize all of the snap points? And so if anybody's listening and they're like, I wonder what a snap point is. A snap point is when you apply another visual state, right? As it gets more and more narrow, you just hit a point, and now you're going to apply a new, more narrow state, and then a little bit more. Did you synchronize then the snap points? So as I look across all of the MSN apps as a whole, are they the same sort of points?
Yeah, so we use a lot of the same points on a lot of the various experiences, but each page sometimes needs its own specific amount of tweaking. A great example for that is if you look at our charts page for any particular stock on the Money app. We're trying to display the information for that stock, we really wanted to make sure that we were going to dedicate as much space as possible for the chart so you can interact with it. And so some of its snap points are a little bit different than some of the ones you'll see on the news landing page or the money landing page. We do try to go for some consistency, but you always need to keep an eye out for where you want to do things a little bit differently just to optimize for the content.
Well, Chantel, can we so news, weather, money, these are all awesome apps, but can we look at them? Will you pull them up and maybe demo them to us?
Absolutely.
Okay, Chantel, I can see your screen. What are we looking at?
You're looking at the weather app for Windows 10. And what you'll see here is the landing page for weather. And you'll notice it's super easy to get up to speed on what the weather forecast looks for right now in my area. I'm based in Seattle. And then what the upcoming weather is going to look like.
And now let's resize it. So let's see what happens as it gets a little more wide and narrow, maybe.
Absolutely. So one of the things you'll notice here is we're trying to maintain a lot of information on the screen for users, even when it's narrow. And if you want to get a feel for what information is available to a user when they're on the phone device, actually resizing the screen to this narrow size gives you a pretty good idea. So we'll show you phone in a minute, but it's mostly looks like this. And then if I were to resize the app, you basically see a lot of the same information, but we're trying to relay it out so you can actually get more of it at a glance.
Sure. Now, conceptually, of course, we've done things like this on the web before, right? Being able to respond to the new sizes. But it's interesting to see how a native app really does it just a little bit differently because they have so much more control. Now, do MSN apps have a minimum width? Do you set so that they don't get any more narrow than a certain number?
Yes. We set it at 550 pixels.
Okay.
But we could go a little smaller if we wanted to, a little bit larger. That's okay as well.
Yeah, but that's all right. I mean, that's a nice size. And I think when people shrink it, they're trying to see it on the phone, and the phone will go even more narrow. And so it could get more narrow, but only when it's on another device, I imagine.
Yep.
All right. Now, what about let's talk about the controls that I'm looking at. I'm looking at a chart control, but I'm imagining that chart control is a homegrown control meant just for the weather app and built by the weather team, I assume.
Yes, that's correct. There's a lot that goes into displaying weather, and so this is something that the team built just to make sure that weather information was going to be easy to consume for users.
And when you put together an app like this, is it where in the process do you start thinking about accessibility?
We tried to start thinking about accessibility right away. And one of the first things we want to understand is where are we going to be building custom controls? As soon as you start talking about building custom controls, then we need to start planning for building accessibility. The other part of the process where we start thinking about accessibility right away is in how we approach theming and colorizing the content in the apps. So we worked with our developers to make sure that right off the get-go, we were going to be managing centrally where the colors for the various elements on the screen get defined, and to make sure that everything was going to be visible for users that are using high contrast mode.
I see. Well, there's a lot to think about around accessibility as well. So I'm looking at this at the news app behind it. I'm looking at the weather app in front of it, and I'm seeing that it looks like news has kind of an orange tone, and then weather has a blue tone. Is that each MSN app kind of has a color?
Yeah, exactly. It's part of our branding that also translates all the way to web. So if you go to msn.com/news, you'll notice that red is one of the accent colors we use. If you look at msn.com/weather, blue is one of those branding colors we use there as well.
In weather, where you have the little arrows pointing down from the day that's currently selected, that's another custom control as well, probably just a simple repeater, but one that you have customized just for weather.
Absolutely. And we put it in a scroll view so that users can quickly get to all of the day's information that we have in terms of upcoming forecast.
Yeah. All right. So pull weather down just about an inch there, and let's take a look at the top bar. I want to talk about the command bar that you've implemented. So it used to be in Windows 8, one of the big kind of staples was that all the commanding was at the bottom. And I can see now all the commanding appears to be at the top.
Yep. So one of the things that we've tried to do is consolidate what we call Chrome to one spot in the screen. And we've embraced windowing as a model for Windows 10. And since we have some of the core windowing functions like minimizing, maximizing near the top, it felt like it made sense to have the rest of the commands and information like the title near that part of the screen as well.
And I see up where the title is, so you have forecast, and then on news, I can see it's my news. And what you're not changing is the title of the overall window. Do you keep the name of the window consistent because of how it shows up in the taskbar, or what's the thought? Do you know the thought process around that?
Yeah, for our apps, what we find is that there's enough information in the core app that you can identify what you're looking at right off the get-go. And so if I'm in an article in the news app, for instance, I see the title right in the main section of the window. And unlike something like a word processing app where I might have multiple windows going at once where I'm trying to find exactly the right window but where things look roughly the same, it's not as important for us to change the title bar, but it's certainly something that we could do if we wanted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure you could. And then let's talk about where the back navigation. So this is you're just using standard navigation, right? Pages and frames. Mm-hmm. And or you may have a content presenter, but you have basically pages and frames, and you navigate like any other app. And I see the back button right there next to the page title or the area title. But I don't see it up in the Chrome. And sometimes the shell will draw that Chrome back button for you. What's going on there? Is this something that's catching up to what features as they're being released, or is this where you want the back button to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. Some apps actually choose to put their back buttons within the body of their app. I think a great example there is the browser, for instance. Mm-hmm. And that's because it really is a core function of their app, being able to browse backwards and forwards. And so we're expecting that some apps will continue to put back navigation within the body of their app and not necessarily in the top-level Chrome. For the MSN apps, we are in the process of evaluating actually moving the back button to be next to the title bar. It's something that's in our backlog. It is something that, from a consistency perspective, we might want to do just to align a little bit better with the rest of the inbox apps. It just wasn't something we got to in the first release. What's really cool going forwards for us is that we're going to be shipping on a pretty rapid cadence. The store makes it really easy for us to deploy updates to our apps whenever we want.
And I assume in behind the scenes, all of this is filled with telemetry, and you're gathering information on usage that users are doing, just like we can do now with Application Insights.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of value in that, just to see if your choices, your design choices, even make sense as well. That's really a neat thing. Now I see, let's in the weather where you have the command bar at the top, and there's a star to make that a favorite city, Seattle, Washington, and then you have the ellipse that show you the secondary commands in that command bar. When you expand that and show the secondary commands, how do you choose between what belongs in the first and what belongs in the secondary set of commands?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty easy for our particular apps. We actually don't have that many additional commands, but if I were to launch another app like the Mail app, what you'll find is that they do have so many commands that actually have to go through this process of deciding, okay, what's going to be at the top level, what's going to be at the secondary level. And typically, the teams will make choices based on what's going to be most commonly used by users. There's some really great ways to do that by looking at some of the telemetry we get from users to understand what commands get used most often. Sometimes we'll just do it based on our own understanding of how users are using the apps on other platforms as well.
Yeah, I think that sometimes you just have to kind of know your own app as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about the one thing we haven't talked about yet that's sitting there looking at us and everybody's wondering. So obviously there's a hamburger button in all of the MSN apps, and that when you click that hamburger button, you get all of the, exactly what you would think, a way of navigating through the app, and then at the bottom your way of getting to common things. When you were choosing between where to put the hamburger button, whether or not to make it collapsed, whether to make it overlaid, whether to make it come down a little like yours does so it doesn't hide it, what were some of the thought process? Because there's a lot of passion. There's a lot of passion around the hamburger button, and now it seems to be kind of a Windows staple.
Yeah, there is a lot of passion, you're right, when it comes to the hamburger button. There's a huge spectrum of usage for the hamburger button when you look even just within our inbox apps. And it's definitely not something that I would say every app has to have. It's a tool, and you can choose whether or not it's appropriate for your app.
Mm. One of the passions around it is, that users, they don't know to click it. But I think that those conclusions were made before Windows 10 shipped with it everywhere. And I think, Microsoft is kind of taking it on to train users that this is an important button. This three-line button that looks like a very lean hamburger is a very important button in an application.
Yeah, and, I'd actually go further and say we actually find that users notice the button and use it, and it's something that we know even just looking at some of our telemetry. And like you said, it is something that people are becoming more familiar with. It is something that gets used in a number of other platforms as well. And the information that we have based on how users are using the apps right now is that users do actually engage with that button and the other buttons that are in the split nav.
I was wondering, that's what I was kind of, all these things are coming together. Perfect. So you have the telemetry, you have the button, and it's a good experience. Good. That's great to hear that users really are kind of navigating towards or being drawn towards it and using it the way it should be. I think a lot of developers don't know. They're reading about it on the web, and there's a lot of strong opinions at every direction, and it's neat to hear a positive experience here. And the fact that this is just a split view control, and it doesn't have to look like this for me, right? I could make it look like anything I want it to look like, but it's neat to see that this implementation is one that's working.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really happy with where it landed.
And so, what's what's next? What do you think is it, like, look at the weather app. The weather, am I missing something in the weather app that you're like, I can't wait to show you the next weather app because it's going to have, I don't know, is it going to talk to me someday? Or is there some sort of cool thing that you put on the backlog and you can't wait for them to prioritize it up?
So I'd say that actually for me, the what's next and what's most exciting is actually working on our mobile apps. So we've already been flighting versions of our mobile apps to our insiders. And the fact that those will be releasing soon is really exciting. And we really do want to get a better sense for how our mobile users are interfacing with our apps, getting more telemetry at a broad scale to understand what tweaks and changes we'll want to make to those apps as well. And then we're also working on updates to our desktop apps, getting a couple of core fixes for some of the apps we just released as part of the Windows 10 watch.
Sure. Let's take a second and just look at the phone app.
Absolutely.
Okay, Chantel, I can see your phone.
Yes. So this is the phone version of the apps. You'll notice here that this looks very much like the desktop version we were just looking at for weather. And so you've got all of the great information that we were showing you before. And one thing that's a little bit different that I'll call your attention to is the very top of the screen. So we've got a lot less space here. And so there are a couple of things that we do here. One is instead of showing you all of the buttons that were visible at the top level in the split nav, we actually have this fully collapsed under the burger button. Mm-hmm. And then the other place that things are a little bit different is that instead of having the search box fully visible, we just have a search icon. And I can tap that and start searching for a city. Or if I want, actually search using a zip code, which is something that's new for this release.
And something else I'm seeing is that your command bar has been moved down to the bottom.
Yep.
That's interesting, too. And that helps for, because on a phone, you're more likely to be a one-handed operation. Is that the reason?
Yes, absolutely. So one-handed operation means that having the primary commands near the bottom of the phone makes a ton of sense. And then we still have secondary actions near the top.
Yeah, I like that. Nice and clean. Should we take a look at news?
Yes, let's do that.
And while you're switching over, I want to ask you, a lot of developers are going to wonder, these MSN apps, are they really one app that's running on multiple devices, or have you forked it so that you have separate code bases depending on the type of device?
No, these are actually one code base. The one thing that's a little bit different here is that we do compile them to two different architectures. So these are built on the ARM architecture, and then the PC ones I was showing you earlier are on the x86 architecture.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of the actual code, it's exactly the same, and we're just compiling it twice.
And then when you have a screen like the one you have now, it's structurally quite different than the one that was on the desktop. Do you have that? Do you have all the elements moving based on visual states in that page, or do you have all the elements moving because you define it in two separate XAML pages?
We are defining this in visual states. So we've actually just defined it once. And one of the ways you can tell is actually if I switch to landscape, you'll notice that actually this page starts looking a lot more like the one I was just showing you on the desktop. So this is just one code base, and it's something that scales. And we were talking a little bit about Continuum earlier. If I were to plug in this device into a Continuum-capable monitor, you'd actually see it look exactly like the desktop app I was just showing you.
That's terrific. I know a lot of developers are wondering this in the back of their mind. How are we actually doing it? We're doing it the way we're teaching them. We do it all inside Visual State Manager. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Chantel, so I can see through that demo and the fact that I use these apps all the time that they are rich and a lot of TLC has gone into it, really to make a user experience that's really not just easy, but it is also a really good feeling experience as well. And I know there are a lot of developers who may be watching the episode right now, and they're seeing all the things that have happened, all of the controls that you have, the design that you have, the flow that you have. What would be something you might say to them?
I would say that any developer can do what we did. We use Visual Studios, we use the Windows 10 controls, and We built some great apps, and we're really excited to see what apps they'll be building with the same controls.
It really is a new Microsoft where everything isn't a bunch of like all the stuff that you can use and the proprietary stuff we use anymore. It really is. If you see us doing it, you can do it just the same. It's the coolest thing to be able to say to developers now that if you can think of it, then you can do it. And if we're doing it, you can copy it. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to that because sometimes you are the only developer on a team and you don't have a designer with you. And so the best you can do is to copy some of the great examples that we have in the store. Chantel, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
We'll see you again.